Now the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade on Friday in a ruling that says abortion is no longer a constitutionally protected right. Abortion access is now in the hands of states. In some cases, that means trigger laws passed in recent years. In others, it means older laws still on the books that were preempted by Roe v. Wade. In Wisconsin, abortion law follows legislation from 1849 ruling all abortions are illegal unless done to save the life of the pregnant person, though that law is expected to see some legal challenges. With Roe v. Wade being overturned, some people are already looking to the future of other laws, wondering if the Supreme Court will target right to privacy laws, including same-sex marriage and contraception. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support the near total abortion ban Wisconsin now has? Why or why not? How do you want to see it enforced? And do you worry or do you hope for other changes from the U.S. Supreme Court to follow on this one? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kimmy King is professor of political science at the University of North Texas, specializing in civil liberties and civil rights. Kimmy, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back.
As I mentioned, Kimmy, this is back to states now. I want to focus on states that either have trigger laws that are coming into effect now since Friday, or states like Wisconsin with older laws on the books. What are you watching for as they turn those laws that were kind of hypothetical into reality?
So it's going to be in the scramble of the patchwork of different laws that you're going to see so many of these legal and political challenges. You have to remember that 13 states, including Texas, where I am, had trigger laws in place. But then you also have 9 states that have previously previously said that there are restrictions that could be brought back into effect if Roe is gone, if there are court orders. So you're going to expect some folks to go to the courthouse and file on that. But then you're also going to see lawsuits in those 13 trigger law states as well. And then on top of that, you know, keep in mind that 7 states have laws that express an intent to restrict the right to legal abortion to the maximum amount permitted by the Supreme Court, which is taking it back to the moment of fertilization. And you still have states with constitutional amendments on the books. So there's going to be a legal battle in courthouses across the country based on the laws. But remember, because the law, you know, because it says looks to the state laws, you're going to see litigation as women come forward and say, hey, even under this restrictive law, I need it for maternal health. And so therefore, I should be given an exception.
Already in your neighboring state of Louisiana, a court order has at least temporarily blocked a law from taking effect. What are you seeing there?
Well, that's exactly, they just did that today at noon, and that's exactly the reason why I said what I just said. I mean, in much the same way, you see that Evers there has said that he'll give clemency. So it's not only going to be in courthouses where you start to see this scramble, but it's also going to be in legislatures. Look at Florida. Rubio, you know, Senator Rubio there, pro-life, recognizes that there's going to be an influx of babies that are going to start to be born. And given that you need to have some provision for them within the state, medical services, there's going to be a scramble in legislatures as they put forward laws to provide additional services or to provide to change the state laws in those states that are more purple than, say, for example, you know, we're bright red down here in Texas.
Talking to Kimmy King from the University of North Texas, looking at the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade that was handed down Friday, how it affects states around the country, Wisconsin and all the other ones too, and what this means about how the Supreme Court decides issues, especially those related to privacy. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kimmy, I want to turn a focus to the U.S. Supreme Court now. What struck you about what went into this decision overturning Roe v. Wade and how the precedent was handled by the justices?
It's really striking, and actually in many ways, it's more of the same when we think about the abortion controversy. Roe v. Wade precipitated controversy from the moment it was started, and it has continued to plague the court in terms of its precedent. What is most striking about it is that Chief Justice John Roberts, who has been fairly successful as Chief Justice for cobbling together majorities in opinions that don't go too far in cases, that have stuck strictly to the questions presented before the court, and he's been more of a moderate influence on some of the case decisions that have come out while still being a conservative voice. What is striking about this decision is he's lost control of the majority. And so I think that's why people are looking at, say, for example, the Thomas opinion and saying, what does this mean for the broader scope of rights, given the fact that Roberts is no longer really able to control the other five conservatives on the court?
Let's talk about that. You mentioned Justice Thomas's concurrence. He voted with a majority here, but wrote a little extra. Now, the main opinion written by Justice Alito, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Kimmy, said,
yes, that's right.
This doesn't mean anything about past rulings on same-sex marriage or contraception or sexual behavior and how states can regulate that. Justice Thomas says, yeah, it does. What do you make of that difference?
Yeah, Alito can say all day long that it doesn't make a difference, but the reality is that if you look at the doctrine that Justice Alito is putting forward in his opinion about substantive due process rights, and the fact that, I mean, he's saying, you know, we don't go farther than the case before us, but the Dobbs case, which is the case where they've overturned Roe v. Wade last week, that case, in essence, took up a question that had not been certified before the court, whether Roe should be overruled, and the court went ahead and went beyond the scope of that question that was put forward. And so that's why Thomas is being honest about what is being said regarding the scope of the ability of the court to turn back rights, because the court is, in essence, saying that on substantive due process rights, courts in earlier eras got it wrong. And if they got it wrong on that issue, why can they not be getting it wrong on all those issues related to LGBTQ rights or the rights related for married couples to get contraception?
Can you talk about that notion of, I don't know my Latin pronunciation very well, stare decisis? It came up in a lot of Supreme Court confirmation hearings in the Senate, including for justices who overturned it. The idea of, even if you don't like it, you have to respect past Supreme Court opinions and only really change that if something has changed in the world, not just because the lineup of justices has changed. How did that all factor into this?
Well, that's really important. And you see Justice Alito going to, you know, extraordinary measures to explain and clarify in the opinion for the five justices that they're basically saying that why should you follow stare decisis if it was wrong in the first place, right? So if Roe v. Wade was wrong, looking to it now and saying, well, it's stare decisis, it's precedent that has been established. If it was wrong, then you are supposed to overturn it. And it's part of why you're seeing people getting angry about the fact that they point to this issue that, well, Plessy versus Ferguson, which is a classic case that said that segregation was lawful and that Jim Crow codes and the Black codes were okay back in the 1800s coming out of slavery and continued up until 1954. They use the example of Brown versus Board of Education overturning Plessy as a reason for why they were looking at overturning Roe. Just understand what's striking about that is that Plessy restricted rights, Brown was looking to expand rights. And here what's happening is that it's clear the net impact will be to restrict rights back to the pre-Roe days.
We're talking to Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, with us to talk about the Supreme Court's recent overruling of Roe v. Wade, throwing decisions on abortion law to the states, and what it could mean for future court challenges to what has been settled Supreme Court precedent on things like same-sex marriage, contraception, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you or don't you want to see Wisconsin enforce the 1849 abortion law on the books in the state now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned? Are you concerned about other Supreme Court protections being changed by the current court? What questions do you have for our guest, who knows quite a bit about the U.S. Supreme Court? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of Texas, North Texas. Kimmy is joining us to talk about state abortion laws following the overruling of Roe v. Wade by the U.S. Supreme Court last Friday. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the U.S. Supreme Court now? Are you happy with it? Disappointed with it? Do you want to see changes? What questions, what thoughts do you have about how abortion laws should be put into place and enforced here in Wisconsin and around the country? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to a caller now. Billy is with us on the road. Hi, Billy.
Hey, man.
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Sort of curious how they always want to keep the women in second class and how they can even make a decision on how they have a child or not.
I'm sorry, we got a bad connection there, Billy. I'm sorry. Thanks for trying to call in, though. Let's try Kylie now in Sparta. Kylie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Kylie?
So I could talk about this all day long, but I'm going to try and keep it short and sweet for you. I am probably the minority here in that I'm happy that the law was overturned, and simply for the fact that any person's rights, so the mother, they keep saying mother's rights or, you know, women's rights. However, the baby also should have rights. And because we, you know, just because technology hasn't come so far that we can detect when life begins, doesn't mean that that's not a life already there. But I also do wish that they would enforce, that some other changes would be made, such as, you know, women who decide they don't want to have children can you know, have surgeries like their tube side and whatnot at an earlier, younger age if they want to make that choice. And more enforcement of the male's role in making sure that they're taking care of their kids as well.
Kylie, thanks a lot for the call. Kimmy, I think Kylie sums up a lot of the argument for the Dobbs decision and for a lot of the supporters of it, but also Kylie hoping for various changes being made to support contraception of various sorts and the economic well-being of women.
Yeah, and it's, you know, what she's getting at is exactly at the heart of what we're debating about the abortion debate. It's important to recognize that the court in its both Roe decision as well as the Casey decision in 1992 addressed the issue of viability. It has always been the question at the heart of Roe v. Wade of, you know, when does life begin? And if you go back to common law, and you'll see Justice Alito talking about that, there has been this debate about when the state could place restrictions on people, no matter when it was, whether it was back in the 1800s and you harmed a woman who was pregnant and you killed her and the baby, right? Or even through as it was being criminalized through the 1800s of when does life begin? Because it was thought at that point that that's when the government has the ability to get involved. So viability had always been set somewhere between 20 to 24 weeks. Simply because if you look physiologically, a fetus or a baby, depending on your view, cannot survive outside of the womb with the technology that we have until about anywhere between 18 to 20 weeks, just because lungs have not developed. And so that's the issue of viability and the ability. Roe had always said that the mother's rights in the hierarchy mattered up until the point of viability. And then it was at that point that government could begin regulating. So it's this that Roe, you know, stood for. You have to remember, though, that part of the problem is here with maternal mortality. It is actually more dangerous for a woman to carry to term for pregnancy than it is to have an abortion before about 8 weeks of pregnancy. And then it moves on up the scale, with carrying to term being one of the most dangerous instances for maternal mortality. And that can vary depending on your economic circumstances, depending on the medical health care that your state has. In Texas, for example, in my state, we don't have really good maternal mortality and neonatal care for babies. And so it's in those states where you don't have good health services that I would encourage Kylie, that if she cares about these issues and pro-life people, you need to start working with your legislature, because in the next 6 to 9 months, you're going to have an increase in babies that have to be taken care of in your state. And they're going to need your support, Kylie.
Kylie, thanks a lot for calling in at 800-642-1234. Judy joins us next in Milwaukee. Judy, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share my opinion about, people talk about the democratic process and anger at the different sides. And I think on this issue, the best way to find out what people are thinking, 100% of the people, is to go ahead and put it on your ballot or your, you know, a poll or something where every person gets to weigh in, because there could be a silent majority on either side that, you know, we're kind of speculating, right, by people who call in, people who protest, but there might be a lot of people sitting at home, men and women, people that have had abortions or not, that they're like, you didn't ask me. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm in favor of, you know, each state, start there and just put it on your ballot. And that way, if you feel very strongly, you go vote on that.
Judy, thanks for the call. Kimmy, some states do have a mechanism, statewide binding referendums, a referenda. Wisconsin does not, though. A lot of states don't have that sort of direct democracy approach to an issue like this.
Yeah, but, you know, to get to what your caller's saying, I mean, the larger issue is that abortion and gun rights and the economy are all going to be on the ballot in November. The difficult issue, and the founders of our Constitution raised this issue, is while I, you know, they wanted majority rule with minority rights, this recognition that the majority could become tyrannical, that there could be this tyranny of the majority where just because you're 51% of the people in the population, you don't get rights because we've voted them away. I mean, imagine if the South had been able to vote on slavery in the 1930s, for example. And so this concern about majoritarianism is at the heart of all these issues, whether it's LGBTQ rights, whether it's concerns about civil rights, abortion rights, the right to privacy. One of the things that Thomas raises in his opinion is that Griswold, which is a decision that allowed for birth control between married couples, might be at issue now because of this decision and how they're looking at substantive due process. So it is very complicated, and it'll be curious to see whether abortion is enough of an issue. Right? With the economy in the toilet, elections have always been primarily about where the economy was at. So the Democrats and those who are pro-choice have a bit of a struggle come November.
Thanks for that call. Judy, talking to Kimmy King from the University of North Texas about the decision, the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade on Friday. Kimmy, I wanted to talk to you about the U.S. Supreme Court as an institution. I know justices don't want to have the perception, or at least they say publicly, they don't want to have a perception that they are politicians in robes, that they really do consider the law. Polling from Gallup shows support for the Supreme Court. 25% did I see last week. There have been some new polls since the Roe v. Wade decision. Can you talk about the Supreme Court as an institution and public opinion of it?
Well, the court, in their Dobbs opinion, you can see that they sort of recognize that they're not going to think about what the public opinion fallout will be. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor famously noted that, you know, if you think it doesn't make a difference when there are hundreds of thousands of people outside your workplace protesting you, you know, think again. It's very complicated. They are, in some ways, they have this kind of myth of the black robe. But as we've seen with this issue, it has run over. I mean, we had to pass a special, Biden had to put in place special mechanisms to protect the justices. Justice Thomas was still getting protested outside of his home over the weekend. And most importantly, I think one thing that will be interesting to see is that tomorrow, this is done before a bunch of the primaries are completed. And so tomorrow, you're going to have a number of states, many in bright red areas. It'll be curious to see how those play out and whether there are any differences there as we move through the primary season, because ultimately any public opinion of the Supreme Court should ultimately translate into the ballot box for the two parties. It's just not clear in this case that will happen.
And very briefly, Kemi, what are you watching for next? What do you have your eyes on?
Get ready for the Texas Attorney General and those states like my own that already had trigger laws in place to go after things like the right to travel, saying that a woman can no longer cross state lines. The right to travel, by the way, is one of those fundamental liberties that Justice Alito talks about in the opinion. And if they start attacking the ability to go over state lines, that's when you're going to start to see some really interesting challenges. Half of all abortions are, almost half, are done through medicated abortions, through Plan B and abortion pills, for example. That will be the next fight. It will also be battles in courthouses to protect women on emergency orders to be able to get access to abortion. And they'll have to do it in other states if their life is in danger, because you don't have abortion providers right now in Texas that are open.
Kemi, we'll leave it there. Thanks to Kemi King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, specializing in civil liberties and civil rights. Kemi joined us to talk about what abortion law looks like now in states around the country. A lot of open questions.